So I'm happy this week to welcome Christian Margens from QSoft and CWI. So please take it away.
Thanks, Mike. It's a pleasure to virtually give a talk at this the seminar. Of course, I would have imagined the first time I give a talk here to be in person, but in these times, of course, that's not possible. So I will deliver the talk from Copenhagen in Denmark. I will be talking about weak approximate unitary designs and applications to quantum encryption. And this is joint work with Cecilia Lancien from Université Toulouse 3. So, oh, 1 second. Here's an overview over the results that I will present. So we showed that very small approximate unitary T designs exist when the approximation error is measured in certain non-stabilized norms. So basically not in the diamond norm, which is kind of the standard norm in quantum information, but in the so-called one-to-one norm, for example. And this kind of extends the line of work that was started by Hayden, Leung, Shore, and Winter in 2004, where they kind of showed that this exists for T equals one. Our proofs, they rely on a technical result by Aubrin in 2009, where the results of Hayden, Leung, Shore, and Winter were kind of partially de-randomized. And as an application, we exhibit a construction, kind of a randomized construction of a quantum encryption scheme that is a bit like the quantum one-time pad, except that it's of less practical interest because it's kind of less efficient, but it has this additional property of being non-malleable against adversaries with no or no or limited quantum side information. So somehow an interesting fact that that such scheme exists. Okay, let me start with an introduction. So the Haar measure is kind of a very interesting mathematical object. It's the natural notion of a uniform probability measure on compact groups. And the unitary group is one example of this. And it can also be pushed forward to homogeneous spaces. And also for this, there's an example in quantum information theory, which is kind of designs for quantum states, which is the set of quantum states is a projective space, right? So in quantum information theory, there were plenty of applications. So there are really a lot of applications of the Haar measure. For example, in entanglement theory, when studying kind of aspects of entanglement of generic states, and also in coding theorems, of course, and really all flavors like noiseless coding, distributed coding, channel coding, et cetera, and also existence proofs using the probabilistic method or randomized constructions. And this is kind of one of the type that will feature in this talk. Somehow the Haar measure is really great. Of course, it's a beautiful mathematical object, but somehow it's not so great for practice because it's a continuous probability measure, right? So we cannot sample from it using a computer, but even discretizing it doesn't make things much better because it's still inefficient to sample from it. So one workaround is the notion of designs, which are kind of discrete and discrete measures with kind of a manageable complexity that fool certain test functions into thinking that they are the Haar measure. So formally, one can define a T design to be kind of a subset of a homogeneous space that reproduces the Haar expectation value when taking a uniform sample from the subspace for every polynomial of degree at most T. And the polynomials here, they have a little star because somehow just from the structure of a homogeneous space doesn't give you a notion of what's polynomial, but on the examples that we are looking at, that's fine. And I think the first example of that was studied, the first example of designs was were spherical designs. So here we're looking at the sphere in n dimensions and the Haar measure on it. But in quantum information theory, it's mostly state designs and unitary designs, basically the design version of the Haar measures that I've been already talking about. There are also other examples like Grassmannian designs, which are kind of generalizations of state designs, but this is just as a side remark. By the way, let me also encourage you to ask questions along while I'm giving the talk. You can interrupt at any time. So in this talk, we will be talking about unitary designs, as already the title suggested, right? So one way to characterize unitary designs is by the use of twirling channels. So a fundamental property of the Haar measure is that it is left and right invariant under multiplication by a unitary matrix, so the Haar measure on the unitary group. And that means that if you pick a Haar random unitary and apply it to a quantum state, then you get a quantum channel that is equal to the completely depolarizing channel. And this completely depolarizing channel, that's we denote it by T1, and we sometimes also call it the one twirling channel. This can now be generalized to what we call T-twirling channels. And this is basically a channel implemented by sampling a Haar random unitary and then applying the T-fold tensor product of it to the input. There's a variant for T equals 2 where we, instead of applying U tensor U, actually apply U tensor U bar, so the complex conjugate of U. And this is sometimes called the U U bar twirl. And there's an additional variant of degree 2, which is the so-called channel twirl. And we will talk about it later, but I don't want to define it yet right now. So these twirling channels, they can be used to characterize unitary T design. So in fact, a set D subset, this should actually be the unitary group here. So a subset of the unitary group D is a unitary T design if and only if the associated T twirling channel, which can be defined in this way by sampling a uniformly random element from D and then applying the T-fold tensor product of U to the input, actually implements the Haar T-twirling channel. And this characterization suggests a natural approximate version of unitary designs, because we can now just enforce this this condition approximately, right? So we say a subset D of the unitary group, sorry, this is a typo, it should be the unitary group of some dimension, let's say 2 to the n, is an epsilon approximate unitary T design if and only if the associated T twirling channel implements the Haar T twirling channel up to an error epsilon. Now the question is, of course, how to measure this error in which norm, and the most natural norm in quantum information theory is, as most of you probably know, the so-called Diamond norm, which is kind of a stabilized induced norm by the trace norm on states. So this is a great notion because we can actually construct such approximate designs. So while exact T designs are kind of elusive objects for T larger than 3, there are plenty of constructions of these approximate T designs. So for example, random quantum circuits from any universal gate set actually implement a T design if they are deep enough. So this is a result by Brandao, Haro, and Horodetsky. But also random circuits with a lot more structure can be used to construct T designs. So for example, recently it was shown by a lengthy set of authors, Haferkamp, Montalegre, Mora, Heinrich, Eisert, Groß, and Roth, that you can take random Clifford circuits interspersed with a number of T-gate that doesn't depend on the number of qubits that you're operating on to implement a T-design. So that's kind of amazing, right? You need extremely little T-gates. Basically, so the T-gates, of course, the T of T-gate and the T-design, like in spoken language, they sound similar. They are, of course, different things. But basically, the number of T-gates only depends on the degree T of the design and not on the number of input qubits. So for two designs in particular, which is also kind of the most important case that in applications, there are additional constructions in one paper by Cleave, Leung, Wang, and Liu, where they construct kind of short Clifford circuits that implement two design. And also in, for example, in the paper by Nakata, Hirche, Morgan, and Winter, where two designs are constructed from random diagonal unitaries and Hadamard gates, as far as I remember. These are just some examples, but there's really plenty of constructions. So let's look at an example. And the standard example is kind of for T equals one, the one-time pad. So probably you know the definition. So it's just for the one-time pad on one qubit, just pick two random bits, I and J, and depending on J, apply a Z gate, and depending on I, apply X gate or not. And this is just the Pauli group, kind of the projectivized Pauli group. So the Pauli group mod its scalars. It turns out that you just take the n-fold tensor products of these operators to obtain one design for n qubits. And the number of operators in this one design is now just 2 to the 2n, right? And it turns out that it's easy to see that this is the minimal number of operators for an exact one design. So this can be seen as follows. If you look at the associated one twirling channel and apply it to half of a maximally entangled state, then by the design property, you get the maximally mixed state. There's a normalization missing here. Anyway, this maximally mixed state it's an operator of rank 2 to the 2n, right? Because we applied it, we applied the channel to half of a maximally entangled state. So if you want to create an operator of rank 2 to the 2n from a pure state which has rank 1, then you need at least 2 to the 2n Krauss operators, right? And therefore, any one design, exact one design, needs to have at least this number of elements. It's similar for an epsilon, the epsilon approximate case. There, we kind of this number just gets multiplied by 1 minus epsilon. At least that's an easy lower bound on the number of elements in the in an approximate T design. But note that we have kind of applied our our one twirling channel to a subsystem of a state that's supported on a bigger system. So what happens if we are only interested in an isolated system where we just apply our T twirling channel or our one twirling channel here associated to our design candidate to a pure state. So note that here, whatever we do, the rank of the output operator is of course bounded by 2 to the n because that's just the dimension of the space, right? Therefore, it might be tempting to think that 2 to the n elements could be enough. I mean, at least roughly 2 to the n elements could be enough to implement approximately the one twirling channel on pure states. So now let's kind of formalize this notion of approximating a channel on pure states. And how do we do this? For this, we kind of introduce this one-to-one norm, which is the non-stabilized version of the Dynan norm. So the one-to-one norm of an operator phi just compares the output one norm to the input one norm. So it's just the standard induced norm by the trace norm on the input and output spaces. More generally, we can of course look at...
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah, sure.
I think I misunderstood the point you were trying to make on the at the end of the last slide. You were saying that there we know there are lower bounds on the cardinality of exact designs, and we also know there are lower bounds on the cardinality for approximate designs. But yeah, and when do I think that I should be able to get away with 2 to the n elements?
Yes. So basically, these lower bounds, these are approximate designs where the approximation error is measured in the diamond norm, which is kind of the standard thing to do, right? To show the necessity of you know, the 2 to the 2n elements, or roughly 2 to the 2n elements, as we did here, we need to actually apply the associated one-twirling channel to a bigger system, right? We needed to apply it to a subsystem of an entangled state. And the same kind of lower bound technique doesn't work if we only look at, if we apply our associated one-twirling channel to a pure state, right? Because there, the rank can never exceed, of the rank of the output state can never exceed 2 to the n.
Sure, okay, thanks.
Yeah, so then somehow there is the possibility that if we only look at isolated quantum systems as input, that we can do better than the 2 to the 2n. And to that end, we now define kind of these plane norms that are not stabilized, right? If I now take, tensor my input, my phi operator here with the identity on additional Etzler space, then I obtain the diamond norm. So now the question from the last slide is basically, do there exist, does there exist as a subset of the unitary group on n qubits with roughly 2 to the n elements such that the associated one-twirling channel actually approximates the higher one-twirling channel in one-to-one norm up to error epsilon? And this question was answered in the affirmative by Hayden, Leung, Shore, and Winter in 2004. They proved that, of course, whether they answered it in the affirmative depends on your definition of roughly, but I think this number here qualifies. So they show that there exists a subset D with, constant times n times 2 to the n divided by epsilon squared elements such that the associated one twirling channel approximates the higher one twirling channel. And it does it even in a stronger norm. So it kind of, instead of the one-to-one norm, it approximates the hard twirling channel in this dimension times 1 to the infinity norm. This is by standard norm inequality, lower bounded by the one-to-one norm. And how do they exhibit such as that? Actually, they don't exhibit it. They just show, and this is kind of this existence proof using the probabilistic method, that if I pick each of these, n times 2 to the n times divided by epsilon square elements independently random from the higher measure, then with high probability I obtain such a design. Okay, so that's great. So we have answered kind of the question, but we've done so at a big cost, right? Because we have sampled all these independently high random unitaries. Can we do something simpler? Here the answer is yes, and that was proven by Aubrin in 2009. And he showed that basically the same strategy works if we, instead of picking the unitaries independently from the higher measure, just pick them independently from a full one design, right? We are trying to construct this weak version with the one-to-one norm, and we can just independently at random pick elements from a full one design, and it works as well. This is sometimes called subsampling. I think, as far as I know, it was first used in this other work by Ambinus, Bauda, and Winter, which also appeared in 2009.
All right, just one more question about the approximate design lower bounds. Do you remember if I try and lower bound the cardinality using diamond norm, I get something like 2 to the 2t for a t design? Do Do you remember if the epsilon times like a 1 minus epsilon factor? If I'm working in diamond norm, does the epsilon factor have any dimension? Like, is it literally 1 minus epsilon, or is it 1 minus epsilon times, where the epsilon is times some dimension factor?
I think you can just write down on a piece of paper using, you know, the root using the same rank argument, they just get you a multiplicative 1 minus epsilon.
I see.
But I don't know whether there's any like sharper and lower bounds.
That was stronger than what, because what I was thinking, or at least the thing I'm remembering, you have to take, even in diamond norm, you have to take the error to be exponentially small. But okay, yeah, so this is stronger. You were saying it's stronger in that sense. A stronger lower bound. To get a lower bound on the cardinality, which is useful, you have to take the error to be very small, I think.
Oh. Okay. Actually, I have to say,
what you're saying is stronger in that sense.
Yes, at least for one designs, right? And I'm not 100% sure whether everything works out for T designs as well.
I see. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Sorry.
So let's have a look at this result by Aubrin. So it goes as follows. So basically, it's really the analog result of Hayden, Leung, Shore, and Winter, just with sampling from one design. And the number of elements increases slightly, but not by much. And in addition, we only get such a weak one design with constant probability instead of with overwhelming probability when picking these independent operators. Okay, so that's great. So this was the introduction. Now let me go on to present some of our results. So in some sense, what we've talked about on the last two slides are what one could call weak approximate one designs, because we use this weaker norm to measure the approximation error. Now, this kind of suggests the definition of a weak epsilon approximate unitary T designs for n qubits, which is just defined by a subset of the n qubit unitary group, such that that the associated T twirling channel actually approximates the Haar T twirling channel up to epsilon in the 1-to-1 norm. There are also variants for T equals 2 for this UU bar channel. That UU bar twirling channel that I have shown you before, and also for the channel twirl. The channel twirl is defined like this. It's basically obtained by sampling a Haar random unitary, applying it to the input of a channel, and then after applying the channel, applying the inverse to the output. Now, of course, you might ask, I can of course try to do something similar for the channel twirl, but it's the channel twirl itself is of course not a channel, so I cannot measure the error in 1-to-1 norm, right? I find this terminology of a super operator so funny. So I think we should call the channel twirl a super duper operator, because it takes as input a channel and it outputs another channel. So For this, we kind of need to use a different norm, or at least there's a different norm that's natural for the problem, and that's the kind of the induced norm by the diamond norm. And we could also stabilize it, but here we're looking at this weak case where we just look at this induced norm, and let me just call this diamond to diamond norm. This is basically just a side remark in this talk, because I will focus on the T twirling channel and a little bit about the UU bar twirling channel. But let me just note that we basically define and prove also an analogous result for the channel twirl. Now the question is, of course, can we generalize the result by Aubrin? Because I mean, he uses quite, let's say quite intense methods for proving this. So can we just get away with, extracting, reformulating his technique in a general enough way to make it work for T-designs as well? To understand whether we can do that, let's have a look inside of Aubrin's work and how it is proven, right? And the key lemma in there is this lemma that is shown on the slide right now. So let's try to understand this lemma. So here we have n fixed unitary operators, and we have n independent Bernoulli random variables. And in that case, this lemma shows a bound of kind of a variant of the 1 to infinity norm of the associated twirling channel, like one twirling channel of these unitaries. And basically, it's the 1 to infinity norm of this channel, except that each term in this Krauss representation is multiplied by an independent Bernoulli random variable. And then the expectation is taken. Somehow, if you think of these things here being just scalars, then it's clear that such independent Bernoulli random variables should, in general, kind of contract this object by a lot, right? Because they will cancel each other. This will kind of lead to cancellation of the terms. And this lemma shows, in some sense, that this happens also for this case of high, in general, high dimensional spaces. So to understand that, let's quickly normalize this, because right, to get the mixed unitary channel or the one twirling channel associated with these unitaries, we need to multiply by n to the minus one. So let's do that, and let's multiply by n to the minus one on the other side as well, except that here we only have this square root of the one to infinity norm of this mixed unitary channel. So, n to the minus one half, we again need for the normalization, and there's one n to the minus one half left, which kind of shows that this side needs to be small, or is small. Okay. So this is a fairly powerful lemma, and it's proven using kind of Banach-based geometry arguments, which are I don't go into in this talk. But let's see how to use it to prove the fact that the subsampling design is actually a good weak one design, given this lemma. The first step is to kind of massage the weak one design error into an expression of this form or bounded by one. And to this, I want to maybe quickly show you how this is done. I think it's always good to that if there's at least one calculation in a talk, so that people can get an impression. So let me switch to the iPad. Okay, so here I've written down the setting, right? We have these n independent n fixed unitary operators, and we want to kind of upper bound the weak design error corresponding to these unitaries. So that our error is just the supremum over all input states, and then the difference of the associated one twirling channel minus the higher one twirling channel applied to this input state row. Now we want to upper bound this. So let's write the expectation over picking these ui independently from some set d hat, which might be a full one design. So first of all, right, this full higher twirl, it's just the expectation over a unitary picked from the higher measure applied to rho. So what we can do is we can kind of artificially write this in a complicated way, which is by taking the expectation over, let's say, vi. So these are actually also n independent samples from d hat. So sorry, d, yeah, exactly. So these are also independent samples from d hat. And because we assume d hat to be a one design, each of them in expectation will implement the hard trolling channel. So in particular, if I normalize by one over n, then I sum over I, and I apply vi to row, or I conjugate row with vi and vi dagger, then I get the hard trolling channel, right? Okay, now we can use the Jensen's inequality to move the expectation of v also outside. So we get the expectation over ui and vi over the supremum of a row. Of the norm of 1 over n sum over I ui row ui dagger minus vi row vi dagger. Great. Now we have something that is, you know, including this expectation value, it's actually symmetric in U and V, right? So we can kind of just insert the Bernoulli random variables over here for free. So let me just copy this object. We can just insert our Bernoulli random variables here. And also take the expectation over these, right? And now we just use the triangle inequality to upper bound this by 2 times the expectation over ui and epsilon I, the Bernoulli random variables of this expression. And if we now go back to the slides, then we see that this is exactly the expression that we wanted. Over here. That's great. So this is kind of the trick how you obtain this side. Then you can apply the lemma, and afterwards we apply the other we bound the other side. Kind of right. This is the operator norm of the associated one twirling channel, or the one to infinity norm. But we can just bound it by the triangle inequality, by the weak design error, plus the operator norm of the ideal one twirling channel. And from this inequality, it turns out by just algebraic manipulations, we can conclude that the weak one design error is bounded, right? It shows up on this side with power one, on this side with power 1/2. So somehow we can just massage it so that we get a condition when for which number of operators it is small, this error. And it turns out that expressing it suggestively, this number is d squared times the operator norm of, this should actually have the supremum of a row, but you know, it's d times the 1 to infinity norm of this one twirling channel. That's great because this kind of technique actually yields an interesting result whenever we are subsampling from a design or some family of unitary matrices that implements a channel with a small 1 to infinity norm. So let's try to formulate Aubin's lemma in this more general context, or actually the result of following from it in the more general context. So that can be done like this. If we take any subset of the unitary group d hat, and assume that the associated one twirling channel with this set d hat has 1 to infinity norm delta. Then the subsampling design D, which is consists of independent samples from D hat, fulfills this kind of strong inequality, strong approximation inequality with the 1 to infinity norm with respect to that that channel that d hats used to implement if d contains a sufficient number of operators. And that number, it turns out to be the 1 to infinity norm of our channel times d squared divided by epsilon squared up to some polylogarithmic factors in the dimension. But that's great, right? Because now we can just apply this to the T design setting. So we just take a full T design, let's call it D tilde. And now we define T D hat to just be the set of Tth tensor powers of the elements of D tilde, right? So now we can just apply this lemma that's shown above to the setting. The only thing that's missing, of course, is now a bound on the 1 to infinity norm of the associated one twirling channel. And note that the one twirling channel associated to the set D hat is actually the T twirling channel, right? The hard T twirling channel if D tilde is an exact T design. This can be bounded by the use of representation theory, which is kind of exciting because representation theory is just cool, I think. So here is some representation theory that we need for that. We are looking at this map that maps a unitary to its Tth tensor power, and that's a representation of the unitary group UD. Usually representations are analyzed by decomposing them into irreducible representations. And they're irreducible representations of the unitary group UD. They are kind of labeled by objects called Young diagrams or by integer partitions. So here are some examples of Young diagrams. So for a partition of 11 into parts 5, 3, 2, and 1, we associate this Young diagram with just a visualization of this partition. So it has a row of length 5, a row of length 3, a row of length 2, and a row of length 1. Here are some other examples. And one property that we will need in the following is that the dimensions of these irreducible representations, they are known. They are combinatorial formulas for these dimensions in terms of lambda and d. So let's try to use this representation theory to analyze the T-twirling channel. So note that we want to find the 1 to infinity norm of this channel, right? So first of all, we decompose the space it acts on, or at least, you know, the underlying vector space, which is the T-fold tensor product of CD, into irreducible representations of the unitary group UD, according to this representation, the T-fold tensor representation that I showed. And this can be expressed as follows. So this space is can be decomposed into a direct sum of these irreducible representations, and actually only the ones that are associated with partitions of the integer t, which is our tensor power here. This is related to the fact that you know, u to the tensor, the t-fold tensor product of u, turns out to be it's a matrix-valued polynomial in the matrix entries of u, and its degree is t, and that's kind of why only partitions of t show up, because these irreducible representations turn out to be polynomials in the unitary of degree t. Okay, so this is the decomposition we are looking at, and one of the fundamental results in representation theory is Schur's lemma, which can be cast into an equivalent form by saying that if I take the kind of the twirling channel, but now not with the unitary itself, but with an irreducible representation of it, then this also implements the completely depolarizing channel. So this kind of implies for our setting that the T twirling channel acts by First of all, projecting the input into this direct sum decomposition. So that means the output is a block diagonal operator in this direct sum decomposition. And inside, it will actually produce something that's proportional to the maximally mixed state on this first space here, the unitary representation, tensor sum left over on this multiplicity space. Okay, this was kind of fast, but now we will conclude something quite simple from it, after which we can kind of forget about the representation theory again. And that's that the operator norm of the T twirling channel applied to an input X is actually now, first of all, equal to the maximum operator norm of any of the blocks, right? Because if I have a block diagonal operator, then the operator norm is just the maximum norm of any block. And this this operator norm of the block, of course, is because this is a tensor product, it's just the product of the operator norms. And we can just trivially upper bound this right side thing, right? The operator norm of this operator here by the trace norm of X. This is extremely coarse bound, but it turns out to be fine in our setting. And the operator norm of this maximally mid state is, of course, equal to the inverse of the dimension. Great, so this implies that the 1 to infinity norm of our T-twirling channel is actually just the maximum over all partitions of T, of lambda, and then the maximum inverse dimension of the associated irreducible representations of the unitary group. Okay, so now we have kind of reduced our problem of bounding this norm to lower bounding the dimension of these unitary representations. So let's do that. And this turns out to be not so difficult as mentioned before, because there are these combinatorial formulas. And in particular, one of these formulas is the Weyl dimension formula, which I put here. So it's expressed in this product. And one thing that's kind of peculiar is that we are taking this product over all I and j between 1 and d, although, and then we're looking at the row length of lambda, lambda I and lambda j, although lambda might have fewer than d rows. So let's have a look at how this is done. So here is some Young diagram lambda. And the first thing we have to do is that kind of we have to think of it as a diagram with d rows, except that, you know, any row that wasn't there before, we just set it to zero boxes. Now note that these non-zero boxes, of course, are at most t, because there's only t boxes. So that's obvious. And now lower bound this product formula here by kind of limiting our choice of I and j to taking I always in this upper part and j always in this lower part. This kind of simplifies the structure and makes it into a kind of a telescopic product where there's a lot of cancellations of denominators and numerators. And in the end, it's not too easy to show from these considerations that, not too hard to show that any dimension of such a irreducible representation for a partition of T is actually has a dimension that's lower bounded by D divided by 2T to the power T. Okay, so that's great. Now we have a kind of a fairly strong lower bound, right? We knew already that a similar bound needs to hold for the average of these representations, because there's just not so many partitions, and together they need to make up this whole space of dimension d to the t. But here we have kind of the a lower bound for all of them, and that's what we needed. this was kind of the last ingredient to our main result, which is which now follows from our previous considerations of generalizing this lemma by or this result by Aubrin and obtaining this lower bound on the 1 to infinity norm of T-twirling channels. And the result reads like this. So if we have a unitary T design D hat, then a subsampling design sampled from it fulfills this kind of strong norm. I mean, it's a weak approximation error, but then the strong version because it has the infinity norm here. If we sample enough operators, and enough in this case are just T times D to the power of T divided by epsilon squared times some polylogarithmic factors in D and some polynomial factors in T, actually. Okay, so let's repeat it. So we could replace this term here by just the one-to-one norm. So if I want a weak unitary, approximate unitary T design, so that approximates the hard T-twirling channel in one-to-one norm, then I can get that using only roughly T times D to the T operators instead of D to the 2T, which is kind of what we what I think you need for a full approximate unitary design, and that's at least the constructions that are known are of this size.
Is this without probability over the subsampling procedure or constant probability?
Right. Yes, so that's true. That's basically, I forgot to put this, to copy this on the slide. It should say with constant probability. Right, so I sample independent elements from D hat, and then with constant probability, or if I add a small factor, then I can of course get it with inverse polynomial probability. I get such a design. Okay, we also have a variant for the UU bar twirl, and I want to show it because there's kind of a peculiar hiccup when proving it, which is, here is the theorem. Again, it's missing the fact that this holds with constant probability. It looks very similar, but first of all, we can't prove this stronger version with the dimension times one to infinity norm. And the reason for that is that second of all, kind of we don't obtain a proper small bound on the one to infinity norm of the UU bar twirl channel. And that's because it's actually equal to one. The reason to that is that the maximally entangled state is invariant under multiplication with a unitary tensor, its complex conjugate. So we literally have an invariant subspace. So kind of the proof of the additional work of proving this result, it can be described as follows. So if we look at some basis that contains this maximally entangled state, then we have kind of this very easy part here, which is just invariant under any mixed unitary channel that where the unitary cross operators have the form U tensor U bar. So in particular, it's the Haar U U bar channel, and also our subsampling design. So this operator, they both act the same. So the error is zero here. On the big block down here, things work just fine. They just work exactly like for a T design. But then the reason why we can't get the stronger norm are these kind of off diagonal terms. So here we have to, we end up reducing the problem of implementing or approximating the twirling channel on these subspaces to a one twirl by this mirror lemma or ricochet property that says that I can flip operators from one to the other side of a maximally entangled state. There's like some details involved, and we don't get the proper norm, and we lose some factors on the way. But one designs are easier to to generate their two designs, so everything in the end works out to actually prove this result. Finally, I want to quickly hint at this application. So this is for non-malleable encryption. So let me quickly say what non-malleability is. So if we have somebody, this guy here who wants to order a notebook, for example, and he sends a message to his bank to transfer 1,000 euros to the notebook store, then this is, of course, a great idea, except if an adversary intercepts this message and changes it so that it says a different amount, right? This would be not so favorable. And therefore, there are different notions of security for encryption that prevent that. And one of them is called non-malleability. So in that case, if our nerd here encrypts his message with a non-malleable encryption scheme, then in fact, our adversary can still change the contents of this message, except that whatever change he implements on the ciphertext, it will just, averaging over the key, it will just result in a random change of the plain text. So then, of course, the bank will not understand the message anymore. There's something more reasonable to do in this in the setting, which is kind of authentication. But say I want to use public key encryption without signatures, which is kind of a special setting. Then this would be the best I can do. And then the quantum setting, well, I can also study a similar property, where Alice encrypts a message on register A, and Bob decrypts it later, but in between there's some attack happening by Mallory, which is kind of an active attack implemented by some attack channel Lambda. And this adversary might have some additional side information about the message as well. Such an encryption can be devised using two designs, and that was shown in by Ambinus, Bauder, and Winter, and later for a slightly different notion by Alagich and myself. And the key length for this is something like 4n at least, if we encrypt n qubits. Shorter keys than that are also possible if we allow the size of the ciphertext to increase, and therefore the encryption not to be unitary. And our weak designs can now be used to kind of construct such an encryption scheme in the case where we have some bound on the amount of side information that our attacker has. So if the attacker has very little or no side information, then we can now use like one of these weak designs and therefore get such an encryption scheme that has a much shorter keys. And finally, just as a side note, one can kind of get confidentiality for free, and that's actually full confidentiality. So this is kind of, again, the protection against these active attacks. But if I just want to protect against the adversary learning anything about the contents of the message, that's kind of a simpler thing that can be done by one design. And this kind of subsampling two design, even a weak subsampling two design, is at the same time with good probability also a full one design. So it will achieve full confidentiality. This brings me to the end of my talk. To summarize, we have used a technique of Aubin to give a randomized construction of T designs in approximate T designs in this weak norms. And for t equals 2, we also obtain variants for this UU bar and channel twirls. And as an application, we give this randomized construction of a quantum encryption scheme that is kind of more efficient in a certain sense. But let me just, as a side note, note that kind of this application in its current form, it will not be deployed in as is, because of course, specifying the scheme is not efficient because we have to take these independent samples. But somehow this shows the existence, and there might be efficient constructions that achieve similar efficiency in terms of key length. And then finally, I want to end with an open question, which is kind of interesting, at least from a mathematical perspective. And that's whether we can strengthen the only case where we, or this case of the UU bar twirl, where we fail to give the stronger norm, whether we can strengthen it to the stronger norm somehow. And this would be, I think this would require to generalize the lemma of Aubrun to different settings. Thanks a lot for listening.
Great, thanks Christian for that really interesting talk. We had some questions during the talk, but does anyone else have any further questions?
Yeah, I have a quick question. I think I have two questions actually. Do you know if, are there known lower bounds on the cardinality of tensor product expanders? So like a TPE is basically equivalent to like the 2-to-2 norm between these twirls. So you might expect that, right, you know, this dimension factor goes down even more, but I don't think, yeah, I don't know. Do you know if lower bounds on TPEs are known?
No, I'm not aware of that fact, but I know that basically all results, I think all results on approximate T designs are proven by going through TPEs first.
Yeah, that's right.
And this is kind of a lossy process.
But I might expect that, you know, because here we kind of went to a, or I guess we just, you know, go into the 1-to-1 norm, we gained some, or we lost a dimension factor in the lower bound on the cardinality. So I might expect that going to 2-to-2 norm, the lower bound of the cardinality might decrease even more, right?
Right. That might be true, yeah.
Yeah, and one other, I guess, more vague question. So, yeah, as you showed this very nice result of being able to sample from exact designs and kind of using this weak norm, I get a nice construction for an approximate design. But I guess because we don't know any exact designs greater than T equals 3, I might imagine some procedure where I sample from, you know, I guess the only constructions we know are approximate designs for like high moments. Do you think there is some construction where I can sample from an approximate design and then, you know, using this weaker norm also, you know, maybe like I have to sample fewer times from an approximate design and I can bound the error in the weaker norm?
Yes. So thanks a lot for asking this question. I wanted to mention this and I forgot about it. So if we look back at the kind of the abstract technique. Where is it? Over here. Yes, here. Then actually I can just plug in an approximate design here and the errors will just add, right? Because if this is an approximate T design, then this twirling channel, or you know the T version, but if this is kind of T tensor powers of an approximate T design, then this object here is actually a good approximation of the hard twirling channel, right? In diamond norm. So I get a good approximation of this object in this weaker norm. So I can just use the triangle inequality to get an approximation of the hard twirling channel in this weak norm as well, with the errors adding up.
I see. Yeah, that's very nice. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Do you have any further questions? Okay, if not, let's thank Christian once again. And yeah, so